Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the podcast, we're going to take a trip overseas. We're going to be talking with Chad King about his family's early summer Adventures by Disney, Cities of Nights and Lights vacation. Welcome back to the show, Chad.
How are you?
I'm good. So you're still adjusting from the jet lag a bit.
We've been home a little bit, so I think we're back. But okay. It's a bit of a trip. So
Yeah. So this is a trip, it's an Adventures by Disney tour. Nights and Lights is the London and Paris trip. And this is one that you'd kind of been looking at on and off for a while now, kind of building up to. Let's start our discussion talking a little bit about, you know, what led you to choose Adventures by Disney for a European trip like this.
So we had decided we wanted to go to Europe, and then we kind of said, well, what if we did two countries, and what if we did England and France? And it was kind of a elimination of, well, we can't do all of Europe in 10 days, and we can't take 3 months of vacation, so what can we do? And it was kind of interesting, as we were searching, we were aware of Adventures by Disney and stumbled on that they had a England and France trip that's mostly London and mostly Paris. There, as we'll talk, we do go to Windsor and you do go to Versailles, so you get out of the city a little bit. But it was a nice, like, hey, it's not too much. It's not trying to get too much at once, and you're not trying to gallivant all across Europe. You know, as you know, and some of the listeners have heard me on before, my daughter has some food allergies, and Disney is very good about making sure that she can eat and feel comfortable on the trip. And when we met with Adventures by Disney on the phone, when we talked to them, they seemed to have that same kind of corporate mentality that, of course, we're going to make it safe for her. And so that was a good thing. And we knew that going with a Disney company, it would be family friendly. So it just kind of was a perfect storm, and the dates kind of worked well for what we wanted to do. So that's how we ended up with Disney.
Okay. All right. So, you know, great background there. And like I said, this was something that you'd planned on for a couple of years, really, and took the trip this past May. The dates, you know, you kind of focused in. And if I remember correctly, this is about as early in the year as this particular tour is offered, right? They don't start doing this trip until sometime there in May. Is that right?
I think the first trips are either the last week in April or maybe the first week in May. But it is definitely they wait till the weather in England and France starts to warm up a little bit, because it is very much an outside trip. And you don't want to really deal with rainy spring. So right. As anybody who's been watching the news knows, Paris has gotten a lot of rain in the last week, but we really kind of snuck in the middle of there. So we had pretty good weather. So
good. All right. So we're going to talk about the sort of the trip proper here in a minute, because there's a basic itinerary that the Adventures by Disney trip, you know, takes pretty consistently. And we'll talk a little bit, too, about the fact that they're changing up that itinerary a little bit. But just because there's this, you know, set itinerary, that doesn't mean that you're stuck with just that. As a matter of fact, you did some, you know, custom things, some additions on the ends of your trip, right?
Yeah. So, you know, just a little bit about travel, because I think people need to think this through, is most flights from the United States travel overnight. So you're going to arrive early morning in London. And so, like, we left home midday on Saturday and arrived in London at 7 a.m. Sunday morning. So it took a, you know, we actually have to, obviously coming from Kansas City, we had to change planes to get to an airplane that would get us overseas, but you kind of sleep. So with that in mind, we thought we wanted a day to adjust to the jet lag and kind of get ourselves situated. So we came in a day early, which almost gave us 2 days, because the trip starts with a welcome reception and dinner. So we got there in the morning of Sunday, and the tour itself started Monday night. So we had a day and a half, 2 days in London before we actually started on the tour. Oh, nice. And then we decided to add on a day at Disneyland Paris, staying after the tour so that we could go to the park. So at the time we initially booked a year ago, there wasn't anything official with Disney to do that. So we kind of made our own arrangements. But they've now put on the website that you can book up to 6 days at Disneyland Paris as an add-on to this trip. And then they'll help you coordinate transfer to a Disneyland hotel and actually visit Disneyland. So
nice.
So yeah, so that was great. So
yeah, and the nice thing really about this is that, actually you can help me understand it, because my understanding was that when you do this and if you coordinate it with Adventures by Disney, even though you're coming in a day early, your tour didn't start until the next day, if you coordinate with them, they'll still take care of a lot of the sort of concierge level service stuff that Adventures by Disney does, like making sure that, you know, your luggage gets from the airport to your hotel room and things like that. Is that true, or did you do it differently by choice? How did that work?
No, that was actually really good. When we called and made the trip reservation, we booked with Adventures by Disney the extra night at the hotel in advance and the extra night in a hotel after. So we stayed in the same room. We checked in a day early and got the room we were going to have the whole time in London. And then the night we stayed for Disneyland Paris, we actually stayed in Paris at the same hotel. So we didn't have to check out of their rooms, and we got checked in. And the other thing, so a little bit different than maybe what My Magical Express people are used to, we were met at the airport by an Adventures by Disney person. We were the only people coming in on that flight, and so then we were taken from the airport in a private car that took our luggage and helped us, so that it can't meet you until after baggage claim because of the way the airport's
customs
situated
and everything.
Right. So we had to get all of our bags, but then we walked out and they were there. They met us. They took us out to a car and then drove us into the hotel. And we were in essentially like a van that they took us in. So it's not like My Magical Express where you're separated from your luggage, or, you know, it could be all day. We were with our luggage and somebody helped us get to the hotel, and then we got checked in, and the hotel had us all checked in, and everything was paid for in advance with Adventures by Disney. So we were good there. And I did learn that about half to a third of our troop actually checked in that day we did, just at different times during the day. And then, you know, everybody else got there the next day. So,
okay.
So yeah, that was all coordinated, and you got, like you said, the Adventures by Disney people were very helpful in saying, of course you can stay an extra day, and we got the same, the nice thing is we got the same hotel, we got the same room, and we got the same nightly rate that we were paying, so we didn't have to, as far as I know, we didn't pay like an extra price for staying that extra day,
right,
so.
Right, okay, well that's great. So your extra time in London, I know that the primary goal there was just sort of to acclimatize yourself, you know, acclimatize yourself to the new time zone and you know, get used to all that. Did you do any touring or anything like that of London on your own?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, again, some of the other people on our tour we talked about, they just kind of explored London casually. We're a pretty go family, so we kind of looked at what wasn't on the tour, what we should hit, what we wanted to hit, and we ended up adding in the London Zoo. We went to the British Museum, we went to the Victoria and Albert Museum, and we saw the Churchill War Rooms in London on our own. So those were all great. And
so just a, you know, a little bit extra, right? On right. your extra day.
Well, we had almost 2 days. So we had, we were there, you know, we landed the morning of Sunday and we had Sunday and then Monday. So we did two each day and got ourselves to bed early and woke up and felt like we were ready to do London with the tour. So,
okay, nice. So I guess let's talk a little bit, and you know me when I do these, I like to hear about what the highlights were, what things stood out. So for that extra day and a half, you kind of listed off three or four different, you know, major landmark things that you checked out on your own because they weren't part of the tour. What of those stand out to you as things that were especially worth, you know, the extra effort to do those extra things?
I would absolutely tell people you can't miss the British Museum and seeing the Rosetta Stone and that kind of thing. But the Churchill War Rooms was just amazing. One of the best things I've ever seen. So short, brief kind of tell you what it is.
Yeah, sure.
The British thought the Germans would bomb London during World War II because they had done some of it during World War I, but with a better air force and better rockets, they anticipated that they would be bombed. So they dug out this basement in one of the government buildings so that they could have a safe place to have meetings and where they could, you know, control what was going on with the war as it was going to happen. And the crazy thing was the day after VJ Day, they locked the door and turned off the lights and left. And about 50 years later, somebody from the Imperial War Museum, which is kind of the British war group, said, "I wonder what's down there." And so they went and unlocked the door and everything was still there. Nobody had taken anything. Nobody had packed anything up.
Like an unintentional time capsule.
Yeah. So they, you know, came through and dusted everything and knocked out a few walls and put up some plastic or glass kind of port through so you can look through it. But, you know, the cabinet room with the chair that Churchill sat in for every cabinet meeting they had underground is still there. The chair is still there. The tables were still there. It was just, it was really cool.
Wow. Yeah. A real, you know, up close personal slice of history.
Right. Right. It was really neat. So.
All right. So that was the beginning piece. Now let's get into the tour part itself. The tour, they kick off the tour with this welcome reception and dinner. And, you know, I hear from different people two different things, right? I hear from some people who say, wow, that's a great idea. You know, that way we get to meet the people we're going to be on this tour with. And I hear from other people, you know, the same reaction that they have to, say, you know, beer garden, right? Oh, am I going to have to share a table? So first of all, which attitude were you coming into it with? And then, you know, what was your impression of that welcome reception and dinner?
We thought it was great. And it was really kind of nice to get to know people. So, you know, one thing I didn't say is any questions you have or you need up front, the Adventures by Disney people that answer the 800 number were super helpful. I mean, I called a half dozen times and asked silly to complicated questions and trying to figure out what we needed to do, having never been. I think I should say up front, I've never been to Europe either. So certainly my daughter hadn't. But, you know, it was just very kind of helpful. And one of the things we knew going in was that there were only 23 people on the tour. And there were only three kids on the tour. So we kind of said, okay, well, we know, you know, it's still going to be family friendly, but we know there's not a ton of kids. But we also knew that there weren't, you know, 50 people. So,
right. We should say three kids on the tour is probably as much a result of calendar as anything else, because you were traveling in, you know, late May, which, you know, that's the beauty for us in the Midwest. You know, our kids are out of school by then.
Right.
But, you know, a good chunk of the country was still not out of school for at least another couple of weeks.
Right. And when we called and asked about, you know, if we wanted to take the tour that left in early June, you know, we called and it was about maybe 30 people and there were 9 kids. So, yeah, that's just a calendar issue. But ended up there was a 7-year-old girl, my 13-year-old daughter, a 14-year-old boy, and then there happened to be his older brother who had just graduated high school. And so he was 18, but not counted as a child in any manner, you know. Okay. But it worked out pretty well, and we met some nice people. That welcome dinner was great. It was a really good meal. We got to meet the guides. There are two tour guides, two young women that led us around. You know, the people were all nice and friendly. It was a really good group of people. So, and I would say, you know, we weren't quite as sure what we were signing up for, but the guides were definite Disney cast members, is what I would say. They were knowledgeable. They were courteous. They knew this was fun. It's obviously a trip steeped in history, but you're here on vacation. So they kind of said, look, we're going to teach you stuff. You're going to learn, but it's fun. There's no quizzes afterwards. It's just kind of, right, check everything out. So.
Cool. All right, and, that sounds great. And you're staying at this point sort of in the heart of London, right? The Waldorf Hilton, is that right?
Yeah, so we stayed at the Waldorf Hilton, which is right in the middle of the West End Theater District. And if you know anything about London, which I didn't know anything, we were really close to most everything. So it was a great place to stay. There was a nice little shopping and restaurant district within walking distance. And like I said, we were right in the theater district. In fact, our hotel had a theater on either corner. So the hotel was in the center, and to the left was Mamma Mia, and to the right was Beautiful, the Carole King show.
Oh, okay.
So those two theaters were on either side of the hotel. So,
and that's a great example of if your thing is theater, right? You know, you could definitely come in a night early and, you know, do West End theater the night before,
right,
and have your pick of shows that you could walk to.
And I'll tell you, as we kind of go through the itinerary, there was another night where we had the evening free, and a few of the couples actually did go to the theater that night. So,
yeah, I figured that wasn't probably a unique idea.
Right. And we actually decided against it because, you know, it was late and it was a big trip all day. But
right. Well, and you guys were on your feet at museums, you know, you did four museums in a day and a half.
Yes.
All right. So after that welcome, you know, reception and dinner, you then have, you know, 3 days on your itinerary as part of the tour in London or in and around London. Talk to us a little bit about what exactly you do on the tour. We don't necessarily have to go step by step, but I don't think we want to miss anything important. And, you know, it's kind of an action-packed trip, so.
Yeah, so I'll kind of walk you a little bit through, and we can jump around. But the second day, or the first real touring day, that was our first experience touring with the group. So, you know, they get us in a coach and drive us around London. But here is the first big surprise that I wasn't aware of. Our Disney tour guides are more of a tour manager. They arranged everything, but Disney then hired a local London expert tour guide, and she was awesome. She knew everything about London. She was definitely experienced, but that was our tour guide. So it was not these two Disney employees that were our tour guides. They just made sure everything happened and we stayed on schedule and stayed safe and counted everybody and made sure nobody got lost. But they actually had a tour guide that was a London native and an expert and knew exactly what she was doing. So that was great. But I just wasn't prepared for that. So, and then when we arrived at our first stop of the morning, which was Westminster Abbey, we learned that since Westminster Abbey is a working, living abbey, there was a service that morning, and we weren't quite sure if it was a wedding or a funeral or what, but the abbey that we were supposed to tour was closed.
Oh, well.
So.
them actually having, you know, a use for their church.
But so our tour guide adapted and said, okay, let's do a walking tour of London. And we walked from Westminster Abbey past Big Ben and Parliament, past number 10 Downing Street, and over towards Buckingham Palace, and kind of learned of where everything in central London was as we walked that space. And then our two Disney guides were on the phone talking with Adventures by Disney, their bosses in their office, and arranged for us to tour Westminster Abbey 3 days later. So, I mean, that was a great thing, too, about being on this tour is, well, we didn't get to tour Westminster Abbey that day, but guess what? They figured out how to make it work. So,
and that's a great example of, I try to explain to people, you know, because I talk to people about these Adventures by Disney trips, and I try and explain to them why it's such a big deal that Adventures by Disney devotes always, you know, two guides, right? Somebody who's a Disney person and somebody who's their local expert. And
oh, no, there's three. Two Disney people.
Plus the local expert.
Yeah.
And, you know, what it means is that when something like this happens, you know, you've still got your Disney person with your group, with the local subject matter expert, but you still got a Disney person who's free to deal with these kinds of, you know, schedule issues that crop up. I mean, these things happen. And, you know, a lot of tour companies say, look, we did the best we could. Something comes up, that happens. We adapt, and it's not necessarily a bad experience, but Disney takes it to the next level and says, not only are we going to make sure that it's not a bad experience, you know, in the moment, and we can substitute this nice walking tour of London, but we're going to make sure that if it's at all possible, you get the experience that you expected to.
Right, right. So then when we got over to Buckingham Palace, we timed getting over there. So we got to see a changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace, which is kind of your quintessential London, right?
Right, right.
And, then they took the three kids and did a guard theme kind of special activity with them. So I don't know how much detail you want on that, or you want to leave some subtlety, but, they took the kids and did something fun with them while the rest of us kind of watched some of the guard things, but the kids were back in time to see the changing of the guard. So, that was pretty cool. Then they picked us up and took us to a famous place called Simpsons on the Strand for lunch. And, we had a special kind of Mickey surprise at lunch that was really fun and kind of London historical, so I won't spoil that for anybody, but you know, we had a good meal and we had a little bit of extra surprise, and I mean, that was a great, you know, first half of a day, right? We're not even done there.
Right, right. And it's, I mean, and that's a great example of the contrast too, right? Because you had the, you know, sort of famous historical experience plus the special Disney piece, you know, that comes along too, and it combines both of those elements.
Right. They did a nice job with that. So, and then I had a thought as we were talking here that, like this was the second meal we'd had. Breakfast was included every day at the hotel. So that's there. So you don't have to worry about that. And it's all included in the price, but this was the second meal we had. And at most of the meals, alcohol was not included, but it was available for purchase close by, or like at that restaurant, they had a bar open if you wanted some. And there were a couple of dads, a couple of people that got a beer at most meals. And, you know, we had wine at dinner here and there. But so it was available, but it wasn't, just so you're aware, it's not included in the price.
It's one of the few things that's not included, because they do market it as an almost all-inclusive tour experience.
Right. Right. So, so then after that lunch, then they took us down to the River Thames and we went on a high speed boat ride that kind of took us up and down. And we, for part of the trip, we went slowly around and the guy on the boat pointed out everything on either side. And then they took off and kind of took us real fast on the Thames, which was great. So,
so you get a little bit of a thrill ride too.
Yeah, a little bit of a thrill ride. So, and then we finished off that night. They took us to a local pub where it was a, you know, classic British pub with, felt like an old English pub, looked like it'd been there forever. And that was a great little experience. So that was day one. So right.
Sounds like a solid day. Yeah. And you know, so that's one day in London. Your next day, again, you've got breakfast, you know, part of the package at the hotel there. And what's the goal for that day? This is the day, I think, where you get a little bit farther from central London, right?
So the next day they take us off to Windsor, which is, you know, depending on traffic, about 45 minutes outside of London. It's also near the River Thames, so it's kind of along the river. And we went to Windsor Castle in, just brief, make sure everybody knows the queen has three houses. She lives in Buckingham Palace, Windsor Castle, and then a summer home in Scotland. So, but Windsor Castle is divided into like two parts. There's where the kings and queens used to live in Windsor that you can tour, and it's set up to show you what it used to be like. And then there's an area that the current queen lives in that's completely closed off, and you can see it, but you can't get into that area at all. So
right. A little bit like the, you know, east and west wings of the White House.
Absolutely. That's a good. So, but our tour guide from the day before went with us on the coach to Windsor. So we got, you know, half hour, 45 minutes of history of London and history of Windsor and history of the crown, and kind of talking about, you know, if you don't know anything, just kind of a brief history of what we're doing and where we're going. And so then she toured us around Windsor Castle and pointed out everything and talked us through what the castle was, where it was and how it was built and when it was built and that kind of history. And that was a great tour. Windsor was probably our favorite day on the tour. It was an exceptional experience and the day itself was great. So we had a really good time.
And I think this is one of those places where the fact that you had a group of 23 kind of makes a difference. I don't know that there were many groups touring Windsor Castle that were that small.
No, I mean, there was a line to get into the castle. And that's one of the other things too are about what Adventures by Disney. Every place we needed a ticket, they had a ticket. The tickets were already purchased in advance or taken care of. Every place we needed security, they told us what to leave on the bus, what to take with us, what we should be prepared for. We were all prepared, you know, we were prepared for all of that. And then, you know, like at Windsor, there's two lines. There are the, hi, I'm Chad, and I just showed up to look at Windsor line, and then there's the group line, and they coordinated all of that and made sure we were in the right line and got us through it. And it was a pretty big line, but like there was a group next to us of 65 people, and you know there was a group behind them that it looked like 40 people. So 23 was a really good size, and we weren't too big, but we were able to, and they navigated that whole process pretty easily. So
nice. So that was Windsor Castle. That's your morning. And what's where do you go from there? This is also some hands-on stuff day, right?
Well, so then we broke for lunch. We had some little time for our own, for lunch on your own. Not a ton of time, but there was a little bit of time to kind of go around Windsor. And then after that, there was a scone-making activity, and then they brought out tea to drink with the scones that you made and ate. So as you know, my daughter has a wheat allergy,
right,
and a celiac disease.
How this was going to go? Because this is kind of a, you know, signature moment. And how do they handle that?
Well, we talked about it. They, you know, they thought we might be able to do it, and there was some thoughts about how it's contained. We did kind of understand afterwards that everybody kind of had their own little contained amount of wheat and flour and whatnot. But we decided to skip that and tour Windsor on our own for an hour and a half-ish while they did the scone-making ability, which was fine. We did a little shopping. We walked around the town. You know, when we told them we weren't going to do it, they told us, you know, the boys' school that's world famous is about a 15-minute walk, and they told us how to get there if we wanted to. We decided not to make that walk. But
they gave you some options.
Right, and so they were very accommodating to – they were very accommodating to our needs and desires to step away from the group at certain times. And they were also very awesome for other people. There were some other, you know, there was a couple there that had coordinated some business around this. So they had to skip out, you know, half a day or a whole day here and there. And they were, okay, this is where we're going to be, and this is how you can meet us, and what do we need to help you? And, you know, so they were very accommodating and very Disney cast member on how do we make this work for you, because it's your vacation. Not, I didn't get any sense, you're messing up the day and how are you doing this, you know. So so that was great. So we did our own little thing and had a little bit of time just by ourselves, and we had a proper English tea in town, so that was good. And then we met back
up with gluten-free English tea in town.
That's right. So you know, tea is good. So, right. But we took some time. So, and then after that, we met back up with the group, and then we got back on the coach, and they took us to an archery lesson just outside of Windsor. And that was really fun. It was a great event. Even if you've never picked up a bow, we had a really good time with that. So,
it's one thing to read about it on the page, but to hear you talking about it, you really do finally get the sense. You know, it's not just a history tour. It's not just an adventure tour. But you get, you know, it sounds like a nice sampling of a lot of different kinds of vacation experiences all built into this one tour. I mean, we're only on day two, and you've done culinary and history and sports activity and, you know, all of this.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the archery was like the – there was a they brought us to a guy who had been a champion archery, like a not Olympic, but he
competitive.
Had competitive archery, and he talked to us about the history of archery and showed us an original English longbow, what they used to use, you know, 300 years ago. And then he gave us a nice little bow and said, okay, hit the target 30 feet away. You know, I mean, it wasn't
right. It,
and then, so, I mean, it was great and it was very fun and entertaining. And they, you know, divided us up in teams and said, we're going to have a little competition, but there was nothing serious. And, right. you know, so it was fun.
Yeah.
So then that night, and that takes most of the day. We get back to the hotel, with a little bit of time to kind of freshen up before dinner. Then that night was dinner at the hotel. A meal was paid for, but they had kind of windows where you could have, they would make reservations anywhere between, I don't know, 6 and 8 or something like that. I kind of forget exactly what it was, but the junior adventurers had a dinner and movie night with the two Disney guides. So they took the three kids and they had their own little dinner, and they chose to watch Mary Poppins. It was appropriate for London. And
sure.
So then we had a little bit of time, just the two adults, to have dinner and hang out by ourselves a little bit. And we walked outside the hotel for, you know, half hour, an hour, and kind of saw what was around in London, then came back and picked her up, and then we all went to bed. So nice. That was a good night too. So
yeah, and again, that's an example of, you know, there was some free time built in, and you know, as the adults, if you wanted to do something, you know, explore a little bit, the kids had an activity that was staffed, that was safe, that was fun for them, and you know, you could be comfortable going to do something while the kids did something else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so the next day is your last day in London proper, right? And then you're gonna have your travel day over to Paris under the current or under the itinerary that you took. This right. is where it's changing, right? The new itinerary, this would be the day that you would go to Paris. Instead, you had another day in London.
Yeah, so they what I kind of have looked on the website, it looks like they've squashed kind of what we did into 3 days, into 2 days as opposed to 3 days. And they've cut out some and kind of made it a little bit more collapsed, but they decided that they wanted a little bit more time in Paris. And as I think what's happened is a lot of people either they have that day in London because you arrive in the morning and then the tour doesn't really start till the next day. So they feel like, well, we have an extra day in London anyway. Or people just felt like they wanted more time in Paris. So they've moved the travel day from day 5 to day 4. So our day 4, this is where we rescheduled our Westminster Abbey tour. So we did that in the morning.
Okay.
And what they kind of cut out was there was supposed to be a London walking tour in a little different part of London that we kind of had covered the other day. So we would have walked a little bit area. So instead of walking by Shakespeare's Globe Theater and across the Millennium Footbridge, we walked by Parliament. But then they made sure to drive us by those things to show us where they were. So
okay. And you were made aware of these changes. So you on that free night the night before, if you'd wanted to go by the Globe, you could have done that probably.
Right. So then we did Westminster Abbey, which was a huge, interesting, you know, church. It took 500 years to build it, and we got a good history lesson about knowing that. And then they took us by St. Paul's Cathedral, and we stopped to get out and look at that. I think you can't really tour St. Paul's Cathedral. It is a working church. I know you can go in it and go to services, but it's not really a tourable thing. So we didn't go in there, but we did stop and see it. And then we went over to the Tower of London, and our tour was supposed to be Tower of London and then lunch, but what they did was flip that, and we did lunch at a restaurant right next to the Tower of London, and then we went into the tower for a tour. So,
right, which is accommodating the change in schedule because you'd done the extra Westminster Abbey tour in the morning, and they probably right. just needed to balance it out.
And so then we got a really nice history lesson about the Tower of London and understanding that, you know, a lot of people think that Tower Bridge, which is the two iconic towers with the with the folding bridge in the center. A lot of people think that's London Bridge, but that's actually Tower Bridge, and London Bridge is the next bridge up. And so we kind of learned that and where the tower is and what part of London it is and what it had been used for. And, you know, there's some grisly parts to the Tower of London's history. That's where a lot of executions had taken place. So we kind of talked about that and learned about that and kind of moved on. So,
okay.
But again, our tour guide was here with us doing Westminster Abbey, the St. Paul's Cathedral, and taking us through the tower. So the London guide was back with us for all of that. And then the other thing that's really important to know about the Tower of London, this is where the crown jewels are. So and the tour guide doesn't tour you through the crown jewels because they're not allowed in there. But you have time on your own to walk through the crown jewels part of the tower. So
interesting. So they don't allow tour guides in the crown jewel room?
It's actually very interesting. Have you ever been there?
I have not.
Okay, so it's changed at some point in the last 20 years. I know people who have been there years ago. But there's actually kind of a moving sidewalk through the room. And so there's a little history that you get to see, but then you step on a moving sidewalk and it just carries you past these display cases with the jewels in them. And so they can't really.
This is part of the anti-theft stuff, right? Is you can't stop.
And I'm sure that's part of it. I think it's also as much of just moving people through. So you don't have a group of 60 people standing in front of the crown jewels for a half an hour while you have a tour guide explaining every detail of every jewel and every stone. And then.
So they've made it into an omni movie.
Right. And so, but it moves slow enough. You have a really good chance to check everything out. And there's, you know, crowns from different monarchs and pieces that Queen Elizabeth uses, to pieces her father used, to, you know, pieces in the past and things. And there's some history around what's moved and what's changed. And so, but the tour guides aren't allowed in there. So then they gave us time to do that by ourselves. So
interesting.
And then this is our last day in London. So I think one of the other things that's sacrificed in the change is, on the original itinerary, we would have had from 1 o'clock on our own, in the afternoon and evening, but by our little switch, we had from about 2:30 on our own. So, so we took that afternoon to go to Harrods, and, then we had a quiet dinner and then got ready to go to Paris the next day. But that was the night that I know several people had a nice dinner and went to the West End Theater, and, you know, other people went to Harrods, other people kind of just toured, you know, took the subway and took the underground and,
right.
The Disney also purchased and provided London Eye tickets.
Right.
So we went early in the trip on some of the free time. But some other people took this afternoon to do that. So,
I've seen the literature saying that they do the London Eye, and it's interesting. So they basically get you the tickets and you can do it at your leisure, basically.
Right. Right. So you have free time to do it. But yeah, that's not a coordinated thing where they get us all on the London Eye at once. So
that makes actually a certain amount of sense, because I'm not sure that that's necessarily everybody's cup of tea.
Right. No, so if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. So you wouldn't feel left out, because I didn't even think about that. But it is, I mean, it's huge. I mean, it is a big, tall thing, and you are definitely up high. And the car is entirely glass, so even the floor is glass in places. So if you're not comfortable, that's not a place you want to be. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some issues with heights, and I think I would have some difficulty with the London Eye.
It was gorgeous, and it felt safe the whole time. But, you know, I get it.
I was going to say, I'm sure it does. I'm also that's one of the few things that I've got issues with.
And that before we move on, one of the things I want to say is they told us, like, at the welcome dinner and at another time, if you did not get, like, West End tickets before you got there or had bought anything online, they said that they could help you get tickets. Now, I don't know if it's the, you know, well, we can get you in the third row of the show on Thursday night, but they can connect you with, hey, here's a reputable place to buy tickets, and we can help you get the tickets. You know, you're actually getting tickets and you're paying a fair price and that kind of thing. So,
right. Yeah. And I've actually talked to you know, Adventures by Disney guides before about this. And they say that generally speaking, and there are exceptions when things are going on with the tour and with the schedule that they can't, but by and large, you know, if you need to do that kind of thing, they'll arrange for the tickets and, you know, you may have to provide, you know, payment information or something like that, but, you know, they're going to hand you an envelope with your tickets. They're not going to send you to go find a broker to buy the tickets.
Right. So I didn't ask anybody, so I'm sure some people bought them online ahead of time, but like I said, at that welcome dinner, they said, hey, you know, this Thursday night is when you have free time. It's probably the best night to go to the theater if you want. So if you want, let us know and we can help you arrange tickets. So,
see, what would have been interesting is if you had taken this tour, you know, a month later and you tried to get them to get you tickets to the, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child previous showings.
Yeah, so that would have been the show that would have driven us to the theater, and I was kind of disappointed that it wasn't an option. There were several references to Harry Potter on the tour. Disney didn't shy away from the fact that it takes place in London, and so they mentioned it where it was appropriate and talked about some things about Harry Potter. And, it was the guide brought it up that the Millennium Footbridge is the bridge that is taken apart at the beginning of the sixth movie or the seventh movie?
Oh, right, yeah.
And so they, you know, they pointed out some landmarks that were relevant to other things. And the other movie that recently came out was London is Falling, and they talked about the shooting that had happened in town and that there were some, you know, filming in London that caused people a little commotion because they didn't know that there was a movie going on. And so,
right.
But so we talked about the, you know, some places that are iconic and you know, the next day there's another Harry Potter thing that I'll tell you in just a minute when we talk about the next day. So,
okay. Well, so this is your transfer day and, you're headed to Paris. How do they do that trip? Obviously there are a few different ways to get from London to Paris. So, how do you do it and how did that transfer go? Because that's one of the things that I think when I heard about it, you know, I haven't experienced it. When I'd heard about it, what really impressed me about the way Adventures by Disney handles things is when, you know, you're moving from one place to another. Because one of the things I hate about that kind of travel where you're going, you know, from one city to another is that transfer day to me is always such a pain, and it's the packing and unpacking and keeping track of baggage and dragging it around and all of that drives me crazy.
So obviously you had to deal with packing and unpacking, and we certainly kind of thought through some of, you know, how do we want to pack what we're going to do and how we're going to do that. But it was pretty painless. We got our stuff packed. So first and foremost, Disney arranged for our bags to be picked up at the hotel. And as they said, Tinkerbell would deliver them to our room in Paris. So our big packed suitcases that were checked luggage, we had to have them ready the morning of transfer. And as I think this is important, because unlike Magical Express, they did not have to be ready the night before.
Oh, that's nice.
They had to be ready the morning of. And they said, you know, they need to be ready 6:30 in the morning. And then the hotel staff knocked on everybody's door from 6:30 to 7 and retrieved your bags. And then they left our person and they made it to Paris and they showed up in our room when we got there. So that was great. So our checked bags and our carry-on bags and our personal items that you kind of carry on the plane, right. We took those with us onto the train. And so that was easy, but, you know, I clarified with them, we took Eurostar, which is the tunnel from London to Paris, and on Eurostar there is security, but it isn't like the airplane, so there's no rule on 3 ounces of, of 3 ounces of liquid, and there's no rule on water. They don't let you take, like, coffee and other, like, liquids through the security, but you can take bottled soda and bottled water through the security piece. And then on the other side of security, there's a there was a coffee shop and a couple other things that you could buy stuff. But so our timing was they picked up our bags at 6. We had breakfast at the hotel, then a pretty leisurely morning. And then we were at the train for like 10 o'clock. I think our train left at 10:45, something like that. So, we were on the Eurostar and they did serve a little breakfast on the train, but they suggested that everybody buy some food at the San Pancras station before we got on the train. So that you had enough food so you felt comfortable to make it. And that was a good decision. So because they just kind of had a light snack on the train that the train served.
Okay.
But again, just like everything else, the guides had our tickets. They got us through security. They told us where to go. They made sure families sat together. They had, you know, we had all assigned seats. We had basically our own section of the car to ourselves. And they told us a couple of different things that they said, you know, told us how to get through the security and how to get on the train. And then they said, they're going to call our train and tell us what platform to go to. And when they call the train, people are going to go crazy and run towards the train. And they said, just sit, because those people are looking for a pace for their luggage, but your luggage has already been taken care of.
Nice.
So, you know, that was just, if you're doing this by yourself and everybody starts running towards the train, you're like, well, where are they going and why are they running? And they just said, just calm and follow us and we'll be good.
Right. Yeah.
And so then there was adequate space on the train in our car to put our checked bags and our roller suitcases and kind of things that were our carry-on bags. So there wasn't any issue with space. But if you had a big suitcase, then that's why people were running to the train.
Sure.
So.
Right. Well, it's the, you know, it's the crazy, you know, the Southwest, you know, trying to get to the first boarding group so that you have, you know, space for your roller bag in the overhead.
Right. Right. That's exactly what it was. So. And then that train's just very leisurely. It's a, you know, 2-3 hour train from London to Paris. It's pretty fast. And then but you go through the channel and you're underwater for half hour and then you come back up and you're in Paris and then you're there. So,
you only have to hold your breath for half an hour.
That's right. it was funny, you know, cause we kind of go through a tunnel before you go under the water. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, are we done? We're here. Oh, okay. And then there's a little quirk I just thought was kind of interesting that the way it's done, you go through security and then you go through kind of French customs before you board the train so that when you exit the train, there is no French customs. So.
Oh, nice. Okay. So that's just kind of on the front end instead of done
right
on arrival.
Right. So then when we got to Paris, we met a coach, and now we had a new French tour guide that was a professional tour guide from France. And she got on the coach and started giving us a tour of Paris as they took us, and we went straight to the Eiffel Tower. So we kind of drove past some landmarks on our way there, but we went to the Eiffel Tower then. So.
Okay. So this is like, you know, the channel and you go through the channel and you're immediately into your Paris tour, you know, basically as soon as you get off the train.
Right. So, I forgot to tell you that the other Harry Potter thing was, our Disney tour guides told us that St. Pancras Station, where we lay from, is where they filmed the external and some of the internal shots for the Harry Potter movie.
So it was like the stand-in for King's Cross.
Well, King's Cross is actually right next door.
Okay.
But King's Cross is the station that goes from London to Manchester or other places in England. So it makes sense for that to be where Harry Potter goes, but it's not a very pretty station.
Okay.
So there
gets
is
a body double.
Right. So they used St. Pancras as the filming location because it's prettier for the externals and kind of things. You know, everything is done on the soundstage, but
right.
Some of the external shots are of the other station. So that was just kind of interesting. And they shared that with us. So. But yes, we got right to Paris and went right to touring. So they took us to the Eiffel Tower, and then they took us through the security and up the tower. And if you've ever looked at it, the Eiffel Tower has three levels of kind of where you can walk around. And they took us up to the second level, which is really the best place to view London. I mean, to view Paris. You're not in London anymore. And, you know, we kind of had our own little freedom up there, but the tour guides were with us and made sure that everybody was accounted for and we could see what we were looking for and had a kind of sense of where things were and what we were looking at. And it was just a nice Disney care to make sure everybody was okay, but then gave you the freedom to kind of look around and see it as you wished. So,
all right, good. So you dive right into Paris. And it sounds like you again get that experience of not having to deal with the usual, you know, tourist lines and ticket windows and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of the places I kind of noticed there were, like I said, on your own lines, and then there was the, oh, you're with a tour group, go in this section, and they kind of led us through there and got us all connected. And I, you know, in places where we had to hand over a ticket, they gave everybody a ticket and we handed it over. In some places, they just handed all 23 tickets to the person and then we walked it through. So that was real easy and manageable. So,
okay. And then in Paris, you're staying at the Hilton Paris Opera. So what about the hotel there in Paris?
Another Hilton, another nice hotel. I think they did a very nice job with both hotels. As the name implies, it's kind of in the opera district of Paris. Another nice area. Both hotels felt very safe, that you could walk outside and, you know, seemed like a very nice part of the city. There's the opera house is just in the neighborhood of where we were staying. And you're not far from the rest of Paris stuff. We were actually on the other side of the river of the Louvre and the Eiffel Tower and some of the other stuff, but it was a nice part of Paris where we were. So okay. I would say both hotels were nice. Nothing was like, oh, wow, this is a great hotel. But they were clean and safe. They had nice staff and everything about the hotel was good. So,
okay. That's all good, right? I mean, you know, that's the one of the trade-offs sometimes with a tour package as opposed to traveling on your own is that, you know, the tour group sort of stays at the hotel that the tour operator chooses. And it's always a good thing when, you know, you can be comfortable that you're getting good choices.
Oh, I would say, both hotels were older, but had recent updates. They were definitely up to date. The London hotel had one US plug kind of above the desk in the room. And then it had British plugs, so you did have to have an adapter for that. But it had several USB ports in the room. I don't remember how many, but there were several. And then the Paris hotel had no US plug, but had several USB ports in the room.
You know,
so,
it's funny, I hadn't really thought about that, but the USB plug has almost become, you know, for a lot of things, the international adapter.
Well, so you could charge your phone, charge your camera, charge your iPad, you know, all of that stuff through the USB port, and you didn't have to have a lot of plug adapters. So.
Right.
So that allowed us to kind of, we had purchased some adapters, but that was something that I was really impressed with the hotels with, that they had gone to that expense to update and make sure that they had power available. So,
right. All right. This is your arrival day in Paris. Now, do you do any kind of a special welcome dinner to Paris or how did
yes.
that go?
So there was a welcome dinner at the hotel. We all had dinner again together at the hotel. So it was just a nice little – we had time – again, we had time to get to our room after the Eiffel Tower, kind of get settled. If you wanted to change, you could. But get your stuff settled around your room, make sure your room was good, and then have time for dinner that night. So.
All right. And then the next day is really kind of the – you know, your first big Paris touring day, right? I mean, you went straight to the Eiffel Tower, but it was just Eiffel Tower and back to the hotel. This next day is the first one where you're getting, you know, multiple stops.
A little bit different, actually. Oh, so okay. The first day they kind of drove us around and told us a couple of things on our way to the Eiffel Tower and then a little bit on the way back to the hotel, just kind of pointing out landmarks. Okay. And things. And but then this next day we actually go to Versailles. So we actually we jumped right into Paris and then jumped right out of Paris. We went. But so then we went to Versailles, and again, you know, Versailles, like Windsor, is about 45 minutes to an hour outside of the city. And you know, your French history is a little different than your English history. The English still have a monarch. The French have not had one since they beheaded Louis the 16th. So, but Versailles was built by Louis the 14th, and Louis the 14th, 15th, and 16th lived there as an alternative to living in Paris. But what's kind of interesting is it hasn't been lived in almost 200 years. So, you know, whereas Windsor, and you can tell from kind of the outside of Buckingham Palace and places that they've been updated because they're still lived in and used, Paris, Versailles really kind of had an older feel to it, which I just thought was kind of an interesting difference. So,
right. Yeah, because its last renovation was, you know, sometime in the 18th century.
Right. I mean, they've, you know, they've gone through and put electricity in and done some sort of some ventilation, I'm sure, so that they can show it off. But, it, you know, it was not, yeah, I mean, it hasn't been lived in a long time. And so that was just kind of interesting. So when we got to Versailles, our tour guide from the day before that had gone with us on the coach was there. And then there was a second tour guide, both French, both knew their history very well. They split our group into half. So we had two groups of about 12, and the two, each tour guide took a group and kind of toured the castle and the castle grounds. So though in France, they call it a chateau. So maybe we should call it that. But you know, talked to us about the history and who did what and where things were done, and gave us the history, you know, and a brief kind of, this is, you know, who, what did Louis the 14th do and why did he build it this way and where did they do things? And then, how did Louis the 15th and 16th use it? And, that was nice. It was a good kind of morning at Versailles. So it's a huge, it is enormous. I mean, over 1,000 people lived and worked at Versailles when they were there. So it's an enormous space.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we had lunch at a restaurant next to the gardens of Versailles. And then, after the lunch, there was an option to have a kind of guided walk through the gardens or take a bike ride through the gardens. And so our group kind of split up and did that. This is where we deviated a little bit. And again, the tour guides were fantastic in helping us make this work. We arranged for a car to pick us up at Versailles, drive us back into Paris, and take us to the Decorative Arts Museum, which is kind of a fashion museum that we wanted to see. And we had seen that there were some things there that we wanted to do. And, you know, my family's not much of a garden family and not much of a bike riding family, so it made sense for us to skip this activity. So.
All right, and that, nice that they were able to facilitate that for you without it being something that, you know, interfered with the rest of your tour.
Right, and like I said, they were just really wonderful that Disney said, the Disney guides were like, great, we should be done with lunch at 1. You can tell your car to pick you up at 1, and this is where we're going to have lunch, and this is where they park, and, you know, so it was that was all great. And so, like I said earlier there, you know, other families had some different needs, and there was somebody I know who was doing some work there, and they were very responsive to where people needed and wanted to be. And it didn't feel like they were just helpful in where we wanted to make changes. So,
right. You weren't an annoyance to them.
Right. Right.
All right.
So then when you were done with that, the rest of the kind of, by the time you get back to Paris, you had a little bit of afternoon and evening on your own. That was one of the other reasons that we kind of chose this day to move on our own, is that there was a little bit of free time. And so we actually arranged for a boat ride on the Seine, and went and saw the Arc de Triomphe, which Disney had given us tickets to climb it. There was a military ceremony going on when we got to the Arc, so we chose not to climb it at that time. And it was a lot of steps, so we chose not to climb it. But we did get some – well, I'll tell you the next day, but there was there was some great – you know, great, get to see it and definitely do it. And the we had a calm boat ride on the river, which was kind of a tickets that we'd purchased that allowed us to sit in a boat, and they kind of gave us a history of where we were going. So that was nice too. So yeah.
That sounds nice. So that was just sort of a more relaxed, you know, boat tour of the city. Kind of like those bus tours, only from the river.
Right. And, as this night was on your own, one of the things that the Disney guide said is, if there's a restaurant you want reservations at, we can help you make them. We can help you through that. Just kind of tell us what you need. So,
now I was curious. Obviously, with the allergy issues, you know, French kitchens are notorious for being kind of problem children. how did all that go?
So, again, one of the things about being on this tour is all of the restaurants that we were scheduled to be at, Disney knew in advance that we had an allergy issue. They communicated to the restaurants in advance that we had an allergy issue. They communicated with us in advance what we needed to do. And then at the restaurant, they were helpful in making sure that we were communicated with the kitchen that it was safe. One of our guides spoke a little French. One of our Disney guides spoke a little French. The other one was fluent in French. And then we had the other two tour guides that helped us tour. They weren't really there at lunch most of the time, but there was some communication that was helped along that happening. On the free time, England was much easier for us than France. But we did find a couple of different places that were all gluten-free. One of the other meals we had on our own, we found a place that said that they could accommodate us and they understood what we were trying to do. And I felt like the conversation got what I needed accomplished. So,
okay. Well, that's the important part.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was a little nervous about that going in advance, and we brought snacks and told my daughter, hey, there may be a meal where you're going to eat what comes out of our bag. And, but
right.
We never had to resort to that being her only sustenance for a meal. So we did okay. So
good, good.
Yeah. So.
All right. And so you ended up actually taking a lot of that day, you know, to do your own thing. And there's still two full days?
Well, on our trip, there's just one more day in Paris. So. And so I think that's where they changed it a little bit. But so then our next day we got up, and they took us to, Notre Dame, and, it was Sunday morning when we were there. So, you know, Notre Dame, another working church, but they have tours. I mean, they have a way to get in. So we did climb the 400 plus steps to the top of the towers and back down.
And are you now a hunchback?
Yeah, it was a lot. You know, the steps wasn't so bad. But a good portion of the up and a good portion of the down is circular steps. And so, you know, there's those triangle steps in a circle.
Right, right.
And those steps have been climbed by thousands of people over hundreds of years. So... if you stop and look at the steps, there are huge chunks of the concrete that have just been, you know, they're uneven steps because they've been stepped on so long that just a little bit, you know, every footprint just wears a little bit of the concrete down. Right. And yeah, so, yeah. And after hundreds of years, there's some pretty good divots in some of the steps. so that was the hardest part, was not so many the volume and the height. It was the small triangle steps going in a circle as you keep going up and up and up in a circle. So, but then there was you could go into the church, and there were a couple people that went in and sat down and listened to the service. And I talked to him afterwards, and he said it was kind of a, you know, 15-minute church service because they were doing, you know, every 15 minutes a new church service for people that were trying to come in and say that they were in Notre Dame. And so, right.
So they were sort of the tourist version of the church service at Notre Dame.
Right. So, and I don't know if that was every day or if that's a Sunday morning thing. They did ring the bells to call people to church. And so they rang, you know, for 5 minutes, about 15 minutes before the hour, saying, hey, it's time to come to church. And so, you know, which is something they've done for hundreds of years as well. So that was pretty neat to be there. But then we, after that tour, this was another space we had some free time, where some people chose to go into the church. Well, we did not. We climbed and looked out from above and looked around. And then we had some free time to tour the area just near there, which they refer to as the Latin Quarter. But I thought it was kind of interesting. They said it's called the Latin Quarter of Paris because that's where all the universities are. And the students used to study Latin, so that's where Latin was spoke and studied. So it's called the Latin Quarter for that, not for what you would assume, you know, maybe is a different ethnicity area. But so
interesting.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And there were, you know, a lot of cute shops and cute restaurants there and a lot of food. So we had some different options to have our own food there. That's the place where, you know, we weren't so sure, but I felt like I got the communication across that we needed to, her to be safe, and they brought us something that looked safe and she was good. So
there we go.
So then we reconnected with the group and we took a water taxi to the Louvre, and we met our two tour guides again. And this time we were split in the same groups that we had at Versailles, but the tour guides switched so that we had a different voice to hear and a different person to listen to. And so then they took our two Disney guides took the two junior adventurers from us, and they had their own tour of the museum in kind of a fun art detective game that they played.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about this one. So I was curious, you know, what your daughter thought of that approach to the Louvre, because I mean she's a middle school kid, so
right,
you know, I was wondering kind of at what point that approach maybe felt too young for them, or you know, if it was something that they still really enjoyed.
I think for her it was perfect because she and I actually both go to museums in a lot of the same ways. Like, I want to see the Mona Lisa, but I'm not going to stare at it for 45 minutes, right?
Right.
So
right.
They got to see all the highlights, but they were like, okay, this is what you need to see, and it's part of our story, and then let's move on to the next thing that you need to see. And, you know, they got enough time at each item, but they didn't spend the 3 to 5 minutes at each item that we did. In some cases, that was longer, with the tour guide explaining to us the history of this and where it came from and where they found it and why it's important and that kind of, you know, so.
Right.
And so they actually, you know, got to see a little bit more of the museum than I did.
Oh, because they were moving more quickly.
Right. So, and they had fun with it. So, and so I think it was okay. I think, you know, if you're kid was a middle school to high school student that really loved art and was really obsessed with some of that, maybe it would feel a little bit too young. But I think for her, it was an appropriate way to say, okay, you know, this is the Mona Lisa and this is the Venus de Milo and this is Winged Victory. And, you know, I mean, those are the highlights of what you have to see at Versailles. I mean, what you have to see at the Louvre, right?
Right, so, right. And the game kind of contextualizes it all for the kids, the way Disney right. does these things, right? It incorporates it into a storyline.
Right. Right. So that was great. So, but you know, we got to see most of this, we got to see the same highlights. We just didn't get as much extra time of just kind of seeing some things. So, you know, as one thing that I would say, as you wanted to know for people to maybe do differently, there was some time after the Louvre, the way our trip was done. But I didn't quite realize until we were done, that they walked us out of the Louvre.
Oh.
And we met, so we met the children and our guides at where the pyramid meets underground, which is kind of the entrance to the museum. So if you've seen the picture of the pyramid of the Louvre, there is an inverse of the pyramid underneath the ground. And there's a kind of gathering point right there. That's where we met them. But you would actually have exited the museum at that point. Okay. So you did have some free time.
But you were already out of the museum when that
right.
free time
and
came up.
And so I might have, had I known that, I might have said, hey, thanks for showing us the highlights. We want to spend an extra hour as a family kind of just wandering the museum.
Right.
Because you do have, you know, it says on the itinerary in our time that we have a little time on your own. There wasn't a ton of time, but we would have had an extra hour maybe to kind of tour the museum before dinner. Now, then you're left to finding a cab or a way back to the hotel or whatever. But there was a little extra time there that we could have made that work. So that would be one thing I would say. I would have taken another hour at the Louvre. So
that makes sense. That makes sense. And if you know that, I'm sure that if you mention it to the tour guides, they'd be like, yeah, sure. So go over there
right.
and, you know.
Right. Well, they could have said, sure, we'll meet you with your daughter outside the gift shop that's inside the Louvre
right,
as opposed
right.
to outside in the common area right outside. So
yeah. After the Louvre. Now, this is another piece where I was wondering, you know, how you would handle, given your food allergy issues, the pastry shop.
Well, so that was the final dinner is a farewell dinner at La Durée, which is famous. It's a famous restaurant for macaroons. I don't know if they invented macaroons or if they claim to be one of the first, but there's it's the original one, and then there's a couple others in town, and then there's even one at the airport where you can buy macaroons. So we okay. I saw that at the airport. So but that was a nice dinner, and actually the restaurant was closed that evening just for us. And
oh, nice.
So and so I didn't feel too bad about I felt safe there because they weren't like preparing them in front of us, and it wasn't like the pastry shop was working. It's really a restaurant that happens to sell a famous pastry. And so,
okay.
So while they were offered, we were safe to be by ourselves. So, and we were safe to eat there and have a couple of things. So, and then, you know, and this is the last dinner. So there were a couple other Disney surprises and made it really, you know, fun and unique. And it was a good trip to spend time with them. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So you've got, you know, one more night, there's no other, you know, tour the next morning, right?
Right.
So what does that last day look like? Do you fly out early, fly out late? You know, what are the options available to you coming back? And we should mention, too, you know, flying back to the Midwest, sometimes there are fewer options than there might be flying back to a coast.
Yeah, so this is the day the last day almost everybody checked out. We were the only family that didn't check out. And this is the day we chose to go to Disneyland Paris. So, I think what I'll do is tell you the checkout and then tell you Disneyland Paris kind of in reverse.
Okay. Makes
sense.
So
you kind of understand for most people. So, again, Disney Adventures by Disney did a great job. The adventure guides told everybody at dinner, okay, your flight is at such and such time. We're going to have a car pick you up at this time, and your bags need to be ready a half hour before that. And then you'll be ready to go. So depending on what time of day people were leaving, they told people to get picked up between 3 and 4 hours in advance of their flight. Kind of a sense of how busy the airport would be and how much traffic it would be to get to the airport kind of thing. Right. So,
right.
And again, you didn't have to have your bags ready the night before. They just had arranged for the hotel staff to come up to your room. Say you were leaving at 9 a.m, the hotel staff would come up at 8:30, collect all your bags, take them to the service elevator, bring them down to the lobby. Your car would be there at 9. And again, it was just kind of a van kind of,
right,
vehicle.
Private transport that picked you up.
It was a private transport that took your luggage, and then, you know, they helped you into the car, then they took you to the airport, dropped you off right where you needed to drop them off, and then took you to the and then it was great. So for us, especially with some of the stuff that's been going on at Charles de Gaulle in the last year, and you know, that Egypt issue was just weeks before we went.
Right.
So we had previously thought we didn't really want to wake up really early because we knew we would be at Disneyland the day before. So we actually arranged for our flight to – we took a flight that left Paris at 4 p.m. But some of the people took a flight that left at 8 o'clock in the morning, which meant they were getting picked up at, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock.
Yeah. We've all done that magical express at, you know, 3 a.m.
You know, that Southwest direct flight to Orlando sounds great until you're like, what time am I waking up?
Yep.
Anyway, so we actually chose to leave in the afternoon, but it did make for a very long day back to the Midwest. We left the hotel about noon, got to the airport. Our flight left at 4, so we had some time in the airport to find a snack, but we made it through security at a pretty decent clip and through all of what we needed to. Boarded the plane 9 or 9.5 hours to Atlanta. But we had a tight turn in Atlanta. We only had 2 hours in Atlanta, which ended up being not bad. We made it through customs pretty quickly. We made it through the re-security and back into then back into the domestic gate. And we were actually at our gate before our Kansas City flight, about 45 minutes before the flight. So it took us a little over an hour to get from our seat in the plane to standing in front of the gate where we were ready to take off. So
that's not bad for an international plane change.
The only thing I think we forgot was, you know, you always kind of shift your stuff around when you're traveling, and they had given us a bottle of water on the plane, and I forgot you can't take that through security when you recheck. And so you do have to go back through security, which the simplest answer is you have to take your big checked suitcases through customs.
Right.
So because you have access to your suitcase, you have to be resecured. Even though you never like leave a secure area, you have to go back through security because you have access to your big suitcase.
Right,
so,
which has stuff, which may have stuff in it that you can't take through. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Okay.
So because you have the opportunity to shift your stuff around, they have to resecure you. So that's just something to be prepared for, because that does take a little time. And, you know, I had forgotten we had a bottle of water, and it was in the side of the bag, which made my bag get flagged. And it was just, you know, it added 3 minutes to the process, but it's just something to think about that can't take that bottle of water with you. So, so then we made the flight home, and, we landed at Kansas City at about 11:15. We got back to our house about midnight, but remember, you're picking up 7 hours. So, if I was still in Paris, it would have been 7 o'clock in the morning. So,
so it was bright and early.
Well, I mean, we got home at midnight. We crawled into bed, fell right to sleep, and woke up the next day. And honestly, that wasn't terrible. I would actually tell people I would stay awake most of the flight home if you can. Maybe take a little nap so you're not exhausted. But it was better for us to get home and go right to sleep and kind of wake up after a good rest and say, okay, it's morning. I feel like it's morning because I just slept 8 hours, right? So,
right. And you know, it's that the key there is to make sure that when you come home, you leave yourself a recovery day so that, you know, you don't have dinner plans with your friends so that you have to get up, or, you know, so that you can just kind of give your body a chance to sleep and readjust.
Right, because like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we were all ready to go back to bed again. And so, like, we made it most of the day, but it was like, okay, time to go back to bed. So,
yeah. Okay. So we talked about, you know, the Adventure by Disney core trip. You added on this one day at Disneyland Paris piece. And gosh darn it, you know, you and I have talked about it before we, you know, started trying to broadcast. We can tack on this bit about Disneyland Paris, and unfortunately it probably won't take us very long to talk about it because Mother Nature did not cooperate with your one day at Disneyland Paris.
Right. So there's a couple of different things. So, I didn't talk about weather our whole trip, which there were a couple of different days where the tour guide said, bring your raincoat. Or there were a couple of days where it sprinkled on us here or there, or the day at Versailles, it kind of rained while we were at lunch, and it kind of rained when our group was in the coach on the way back from Versailles. But most of the time, we had pretty good weather. Well, the day at our day at Disneyland Paris was the worst weather we had, and it was the start of all the rain that Paris has had. If you've been watching the news much in the last week, it was the first day of many, many days of rain. And it just poured the entire day. So add to it a couple of different things. So let me back up. If you've not listened to any of the other Disneyland Paris or don't know anything about it, real quick, there's two parks. There's Disneyland Paris and Walt Disney Studios. They're right next to each other. They're kind of catty corner to each other. And they're both pretty small. The Disneyland Paris is set up kind of like Magic Kingdom, and Walt Disney Studios is kind of like Hollywood Studios. Those are the best comparison. But 2017 is the 25th anniversary of Disneyland Paris. So in addition to it pouring and being really rainy, about a quarter of the park is under some form of refurbishment because they're getting ready for the anniversary.
Right. So this is the pre-anniversary spruce up, sort of like what was happening in Disneyland in, 2014.
Right. So, but it's pretty extensive. I mean, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, Peter Pan, Star Tours, Rock and Roller Coaster are all closed almost the entirety of 2015.
Wow.
2016 now. I'm sorry. That all four of those are closed almost this entire year. They closed in January, and they're not expected to open until December. And there are several other things that have a partial closure during part of the year. And that part of their kind of lake that they have is drained kind of like at Disneyland because they're reorganizing some stuff over there. So I would say we kept looking at the ground most of the time because we were trying to keep our eyes out of the rain. we didn't notice that it felt like a bunch of the park was, but it definitely made it. So we felt like we could do both parks in a day with outdoor closures and all of that stuff closed. It wasn't like we had too much to do. But we bought our Disney poncho because you have to do that, right? But a lot of the outdoor rides also closed due to the weather. So the Indiana Jones roller coaster was closed, which should have been open, but it was closed that day. A lot of the food and kind of cart vendors that are usually open were closed because of the weather. But beyond that, like I said, we could do this real quick. we really enjoyed the unique rides. Ratatouille is awesome. Crush's coaster is a really good indoor ride. A really nice, mid-level roller coaster. Ratatouille, I would say, I was describing it to somebody today, is it's like the first of what they've done a lot of, it seems like, in Shanghai, where it's a good mix of physical experience versus 3D screens to kind of give you an interactive mix of things. So,
right, that balance of animatronic and projection.
Well, so like you're in Ratatouille is the first of their trackless rides, right?
It's not the first, but it's among them.
Okay.
Because there's also Pooh's Honey Hunt, and I believe there's one more trackless. One of the newer Haunted Mansion versions is trackless.
Okay.
I want to say Phantom Manor.
Okay. So I don't, we did Phantom Manor, but I don't know that I noticed it was trackless.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the one. It's not the one in Paris. Phantom Manor in Hong Kong, maybe?
Okay. Well, so from my understanding is the cars don't get a unique experience, but you kind of go through Ratatouille in three or four different cars as a group. And because it's trackless, sometimes you're the first car, sometimes you're the second car as you go through the rooms is kind of my understanding.
Okay.
So, but you're going through that ride as a rat in the kitchen. And so, you kind of slide under a physical piece that's supposed to be like the oven, and there's some heat coming off of it, but you can see there's a physical item above you that's supposed to be underneath the oven.
Okay.
But then you slide in front of a screen where you see the champagne bottle fall on the ground and shoot at you in a 3D kind of effect. I thought it was a really nice mix of those two. And the little bit I've seen online of like what they've done with the some of the rides in Shanghai, particularly Pirates is the one I was thinking of, that looked like it was a good mix of those two. So,
yeah, no, that's absolutely a good point.
And so then the other two that we thought were really nice was the Space Mountain Mission 2, which is definitely a different ride. It goes upside down if you're not prepared for that. It definitely goes upside down.
And it uses the same launch mechanism as Rock and Roller Coaster does, you know, in Walt Disney World.
Yes. Yes. And it's got some neat physical items in there that, you know, these glow in the dark planets and things. So that was pretty cool. And then Phantom Manor's great. And I won't tell you too much, but it has a story that kind of carries through the ride. Whereas the other two just kind of, the other two in the States are really just kind of, oh, you're in a haunted house. But the Phantom Manor really has a story that's connected to Big Thunder Mountain, which is next to it. So
nice.
That being said, most of the audio in the rides were almost entirely in French. So
that's a bit of a challenge.
If you'd never been on Tower of Terror, you kind of have no idea what's going on.
Rod Serling with a French accent would be interesting.
It is definitely funny. And the Snow White ride, there's not a ton of talking, but it's all in French, so I didn't know what was going on. But all of the safety instructions are given in French and English, and sometimes they were also given in Spanish, which I did talk to somebody there, and he said that they do have a huge Spanish crowd that visits. So,
oh, yeah.
So a lot of – sometimes the safety instructions were given in three different languages. And the and like when we did Tower of Terror, the cast member gives the safety instructions verbally to you, and he said them both in French and English. So so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, the two parks were easy to navigate. It was a fun trip, I would say. You know, it was the – wettest I've ever been at a Disney park, but we still had a pretty good time, and we enjoyed it. So I think it was a worth add-on. The one thing, like I said, that was not offered when we booked this a year ago that they do now is, from my understanding, is you can now say, hey, can I get the Disneyland Paris add-on? And they'll coordinate moving you to a Disneyland Paris hotel, getting you park entrance tickets, and then doing your transfer back to the airport from the Disneyland Paris hotel.
So not necessarily having to go do the whole Paris and take the train out to Disneyland Paris.
Right. And so we actually hired a private car that we had coordinated with somebody, that we had a car take us there and a car bring us back. But that's an expense I had to pick up that,
right,
you know, obviously if I'm paying Disney to do it, I'm picking it up there too, but I'm also picking it up a little differently. So,
right, right.
So,
all right. Well, that's an interesting piece. So we covered a lot of ground here, right? Two countries and, you know, and the add-ons on both ends, a lot of trip. So I always like to wrap up with a couple of questions. And the one that I want to start with is, looking back, and if you had to pick out the one thing, and let's call it maybe the one thing from each piece, right? So one thing from London, one thing from Paris, one thing from the Disneyland, you know, from the park piece. What are the things that 5 years, 10 years down the road, when you think back about this trip, are really going to stand out?
So of the pre-tour stuff, I definitely say the Churchill War Rooms was definitely worth it. If you have any interest in war history or World War II, that was just magnificent. But we really enjoyed Windsor. It's a great little town. The castle's beautiful. It was a fun day. I think, you know, we've talked about what would we do again, and we wouldn't do this itinerary again, but we would go back to England and do things we didn't do, like go up to Scotland or go to Stonehenge or, you know, go see a football game,
right,
kind of thing. But if we were to do it, we would definitely go back to Windsor. So I think that's what I would say we picked out for the London piece, was Windsor was really a great part for us. So,
okay.
In Paris, the Louvre was amazing. And even, you know, they one of the tour guides told us that if you wanted to see every item in the Louvre for 45 seconds, it would take you 3 months night and day, and wow. you probably wouldn't see everything. So to say we only had 2 hours there, I would definitely say I'd want to go back there and kind of see some of the other stuff. So that was what I would do. But
yeah, see, in that context, it's like, you know, it would be almost like telling somebody, okay, here's, you know, a great novel. You can only read 2 pages.
Right. But they're the best 2 pages. and, you know, I mean, there are certainly better pieces there than others, but it was, yeah, I mean, it was great. So, and I, you know, I really enjoyed the Eiffel Tower too. So that was fun. I would say for Disneyland Paris, I just enjoy the different takes they do. I think, you know, it's funny to see Phantom Manor, which is, and having ridden the 2 haunted mansions.
Oh, right, right.
That to see the same information that's 60-70% the same presented in a third and different way, because it's even different between California and Florida. The, you know, the orientation of things are different, the order of things is different, and there's different things. So it was definitely interesting to see that. So I like seeing how Disney takes something, and while it's similar, it's different. So
sure, sure. And that's a great example, because, you know, I mean, not only is it thematically inside somewhat different, but it's in Frontierland, right? I mean, it's a totally different context.
Right, right. And that's where there, like I said, there's a connection to the story that connects it to Frontierland and the Big Thunder Mountain story that goes on. And so you kind of have to write it to understand that, but that was kind of cool. So.
All right. All right. And then the last, you know, bit here we like to do as we wrap up is, you know, somebody else who's considering a trip like this and maybe is a little reluctant, you know, I mean, they look at the price tag, they look at the, you know, the time involved, they look at kind of an itinerary here, and they say, well, gee, you know, gosh, it's only 2 hours in the Louvre. I want to spend, you know, 6 hours in the Louvre, or, you know, a day in the Louvre. What kind of advice would you give to somebody who's weighing it out and trying to decide, you know, is this a trip that's worth taking?
I think this was a great way to kind of sample Europe and figure out what do we like and what do we want to do again. And like I said, we've talked about, we would love to go back to England now and maybe do some different things of England. But we really enjoyed that much more than France. So, you know, Paris did not be like, oh God, we got to go back to Paris. Now somebody else is going to take the same trip and have exactly the same, exactly the opposite opinion. Like, God, I need to spend more time in Paris and you know, I don't need to go back to London. So I think that, you know, that's great. As a price tag, it's not cheap. And if you look at the website, you're going to go, okay, this is expensive. And, you know, you add to it the airfare and, it's not cheap, but beyond that, really, if you don't add on anything extra, there really aren't a lot of surprises of what other money you need. And, you know, I had a big question of how much cash do we need and how much extra money do we need? And while we were there, we did not spend a lot of money outside of the things that we chose to add on to the trip. So, so I think, you know, it is nice to look at it and go, okay, well, I know what I'm spending. Where, you know, you go to Disney World and you're like, well, I paid for the hotel and the food and maybe the tickets and everything. But then you get there and you buy this, you know, you buy these extra things and you buy this extra thing and you buy all the souvenirs and all of that. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I spent a lot more than I planned on. So, but so it was pretty, the price is pretty close to all inclusive. So like you said, they don't advertise it as all inclusive, but most inclusive, right? So, right. To that piece, one of the other things I wanted to say that I think is just kind of noteworthy is Disney has taken care of all gratuities for you. So you don't need to tip the bellman, the housekeeper, the waiters, the drivers, anything else you might think of. They're all taken care of by Disney.
Nice.
But you are expected to tip your 2 tour guides. So,
that makes a certain amount of sense because you do have you spend the most direct time with them too.
Right. And that's in the book they send you before you go that kind of gives you a, hey, this is what you need to plan for. and that kind of thing. So,
right. Well, so I guess good points. And any sort of overarching bit of advice you'd give to somebody thinking about this kind of trip?
You know, like I said, we planned this a year in advance, and we tend to be pretty extensive planners. But I think through how you'd like to do it, and is this, you know, what are the ages of your children? It's definitely family friendly. And like I said, we had a 7-year-old, a 13, a 14-year-old, and an 18-year-old. And then the adults were some of the, you know, there were the families, and then mostly everybody else was just empty nesters. So kind of in that all our kids are in college or just out of college kind of thing. You have to be able to walk, you have to be able to do. But it was, you know, plan ahead and you'll be fine. So I think that was, you know, where we felt good about it. So.
All right. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to, you know, share the information about the trip. We ran a little bit longer than we usually do, but then again, the trip was a little bit longer and is, you know, unique. I mean, we haven't had anybody talk about this particular Adventures by Disney trip or really any of the European Adventures trips yet. So, thanks for breaking the ice for us on that. And I'm
well,
sure
now I got to take another one, right?
That's so. Right. That's right. Now you got to take another one so you can tell us more. Because we'd absolutely love to hear about it.
Well, great.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation. Right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. Never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.